Welcome, Kevin, to the floor.
Wow, that was quick. Kevin, alcoholic. I thought we did birthdays, all this other stuff. Can everybody hear me okay? Cool. Well, a couple things right off the bat. Let's get out of the way is, first off, welcome to my spare bedroom. It's kind of awkward here. It's the first time I ever spoke in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with nothing on but a shirt and a tie and a pair of underwear. But, you know, we'll get through it together. My sobriety date is January 23rd, 2012. My sponsor is Luke B., and he has a sponsor, Stevie B. I have sponsees Nate K. and Anthony M., and my home group is the Ghost and Links group, Men's Stag, Thursday Night Stag. And, you know, saying that, today, I have 9 years of sobriety. And it's, thank you. Attila, whoa, awesome. Good to see you, bro. That's a high school buddy I probably haven't seen for 30 years right there. Wow, in the program. Today's been an emotional day. I'm an emotional guy. I'll just pre-warn you guys up front. Just this morning, all the calls, the texts, Facebook posts. I just went out to my backyard this morning and just broke down and just started crying. And I was just thinking, what the heck? Why are you crying, dude? Is this just overwhelmed with emotion and gratitude for what this program has given me. It's amazing. It's truly given me a life beyond my wildest dreams, you know. There's a lot of men in this room that are very important to me. They have, you know, wow, I can't even express how much they mean to me. And my cousin Jim, who first got me into treatment and did all the footwork and helped me out in the beginning. Lee was my first sponsor. He sponsored me, took me through the steps the first time. Jason V sponsored me for approximately like 6 years. Became a very close brother of mine now, you know. Cody, I actually had the opportunity to sponsor Cody for a little bit and be a part of his recovery. It's great. I'm still looking for my sponsee. Where's he at? He ain't here yet. He's on his way. Billy, there's just so many men in the program that have just taught me and just paved the way for me that it's just amazing, and I'm eternally grateful. I can't even express to you how much it means to me. I like to kind of like start off light, you know what I mean? I got plenty of time to get serious, you know. But something, you know, remember back like in the olden days when we used to go to a room, you know, go to a building together, sit in the same room together, you know, and have a meeting, you know. When I speak, I like to look out at everybody and look at the room and just imagine what it would be like if all of us were loaded right now, you know. It would be on fire. I mean, literally, like the room would be on fire. There'd be flames coming up, you know. There's always that guy, they're going to be that guy, that one guy, you know, that I love you guy, you know, the guy that just walks around hugging everyone, and I love you, man, I love you, man. There'd be some dudes sitting in the front row, probably passed out, wet themselves, flames, buildings on fire, they're just passed out. A couple girls probably sitting on their laps, you know. Where's that drink you promised to buy me? Because we know that never happened, right? You got the criers. There'd be some dudes crying in the corner, you know, drumming up some drama. Poor me, poor me, pour me another drink, right? You got the fighters over in the corner, you know. And by the way, the I love you guy, now he's switched. He's done a 180. Now he's swinging on you. You know, how many times do we see this stuff, you know? And then, you know, you got alcoholics like me that, oh, the room's on fire. This looks like a perfect time to get butt naked and run around. You know? Man, I think about my childhood. I think back on my childhood, and I think about, you know, no wonder I turned to alcohol and drugs to just help me bury all that pain. And I was My dad, just to tell you a little bit about my background when I was a kid, my dad left when I was two. My mom was diagnosed schizophrenic. She couldn't take care of my little brother and I, and we were taken from her when I was 8 years old, and he was 5 years, my little brother was 5 years old, and we were put into foster care. And, you know, that was like a real traumatic, like, experience for me. You know, it was tough, and there was a lot of things that happened during that time frame when I was younger. You know, there was a lot of molestation, a lot of abuse. It was rough for me as a very young kid. It was very rough, you know, and I developed early those feelings of not being a part of, not feeling, you know. I'd look at my friends and I'd see the families that they'd had, you know, the parents. They have a mom and a dad that loved them, and, you know, they could look at their family and look at their parents, and I was that, you know, I came from them, you know, this is my mom, this is my dad, and I envied that so much. I wanted to have what they had, right? I wanted that, you know, and I didn't have that. And then, you know, there's no, you know, no one teaches us any tools for this kind of stuff when we're little kids, right? So what happened with me was I learned how to bury stuff. I learned how to tuck it away. I learned how to bury it. And they would bring my mom out to the foster home like once every 6 months. You know, I'd build up a wall. I'd become calloused. I'd be able to deal with it. And then they'd bring her and put her in front of me, you know, and then the process would start all over again. And this was just like a vicious cycle that just went on and on and on, you know. So I developed a lot of, you know, I don't know, just bad ways of dealing with emotions, you know. Emotions for me were to be buried, you know. And, you know, as I got older, they were buried in a bottle. They were buried in weed. They were buried in, I was a human garbage can. Whatever you got, you know, I'm having it. You know, if it's going to get Kevin out of me, if it's going to get me out of me right now, I'm going for it. I'm good, you know, because that's what it's about. You know, I want to get outside of these feelings that I'm having. And, you know, as I got older, I remember I got a high school girlfriend, and she became my new higher power. And she was my whole world. I clung to her like she was my everything, you know, and I wound up marrying her. Going into the military, and as a young man, I was starting, things were happening for me. I was starting to become successful. You know, I left the foster home when I was 16 years old, and I moved into this dairy farm with my first wife. You might remember her, Lori Attila, Lori Mattos, and I lived out on the farm, and I was milking cows and going to high school and working, doing all this ranch work when I got out of school, you know. And then I went into the military, and I was being, you know, pretty successful. My drinking hadn't become full bore yet. And I was basically, you know, smoking pot here and there, drinking just like everyone does in high school, partying at parties, you know. I got into the Navy, and then my alcoholism really kicked in. I really started to drink like a professional, you know. I mean, it was all about working hard and partying hard was just the way I viewed it. I didn't see any problem, any issue, you know. And then I also got into, during that period of time in the military, I got into martial arts really heavily, and that was a really good positive thing for me, you know. And also was heavily into music, and you know, both those things were, it kind of was kind of weird, you know. Music kind of took a turn for me where I was in this heavy metal band when I got out of the military, and it was all about ego and aggression and selfishness and look at me, and martial arts was always like a positive good thing in my life, you know, learning all those good things that they teach, you know. And it was just crazy, man. I just things just didn't work out the way I thought they were going to. My life started taking a little turn for the worse. I started to not, I started to stunt my growth with my drinking and using. I was doing good in the military. I was in a special warfare squadron. Things were going, I was starting to become successful at things, but I never could like reach a certain level of doing things, you know, to the best of my ability, because alcohol and drugs would get in the way and I'd start to get into trouble and I'd start to hang out with the wrong people. And, you know, when I drank, the problem was I couldn't stop. You know, I would take a drink and I would know what the end result is going to be. And I would know that, you know, I'm not going to be able to stop. It would be so bad. Sometimes I would have to tell my friends like, hey man, I'm going to have a shot of whiskey. You're going to have to get me out of this bar, man. Cause I, you know, after about six shots, you know, you're going to have to pull me out of here. Cause I actually have no control anymore. You know, but the thought never occurred to me that like, how about just not have that shot of whiskey? You know, that was off the table. That wasn't even going to happen, you know? And, I'll tell you guys something, you know, right now, cause I'm really struggling for the words right now. I got vaccinated from COVID yesterday, and right now I have over 100 temperature right now. I have a fever, and I'm sweating, and I'm, like, totally out of it, man. And I started, my brain's just going, all right, Kevin, where are you going with this? And I'm, like, before I spoke, you know, I'm like, all right, well, you know, I never say no to an AA request unless I have a good darn reason to, you know, and I didn't have a good reason to, so I'm going to tough it out and just bear with me, guys. I'm just going to do the best I can, you know? So I can feel it rising and I'm starting to get soaking wet now, but hopefully that's just a result of the vaccine and not me actually having the Rona right after I got the vaccine. So anyway, you know, bottom line, I don't drink like a normal person. I don't drink like my fellows, right? I'm bodily and mentally different, and it became apparently obvious to me, but I kept doing it. Why? You know, the insanity of alcoholism, because I have this disease, you know, I have alcoholism. There's a guy in my home group that always says, you know, we have alcoholism, not alcoholism. And, you know, I have a daily reprieve from alcoholism based upon my spiritual condition, you know? And it says daily reprieve. It doesn't say, you know, I have a weekly reprieve or a monthly reprieve or an annual reprieve. It's a daily reprieve. You know, so what do I got to do about that? I have to treat my alcoholism daily, right? So how do I do that? How do I treat my alcoholism daily? You know, through prayer, through meditation, through going to meetings, through sponsorship, through sponsoring guys, you know, being of service to others, working the steps, sponsoring guys has been a huge part of my recovery. Every time I sit down with a guy and you know, I work with another man in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have to crack the book open. I have to review those steps. I have to review those step one, step two, step three. I have to dig into the book as well, you know, and it brings me back and reiterates those things for me, because I have a great forgetter, right? I'm an alcoholic. Now I forget easy and I need to be reminded. That's why I have to attend regular meetings regularly, you know? So, you know, what happened back when I was younger with that first wife, she left me. She left me for some other guy and took off to Mexico, and that wound up in a divorce, you know. And I went into probably a 2-year pity party where I did nothing but just drink, smoke weed, do whatever drugs, sleep with whoever I could sleep with. I mean, it was really bad, you know, because I'm you know, I'm an alcoholic, I'm an addict, I have problems. I have problems with sex. I run the whole gamut, you know. I'm one of the sick ones, right? They say some are sicker than others. I'm the sicker than others category. Definitely, you know. Yep, that's right, James. Me. You know, so like most good alcoholics do, I pulled a geographic because, you know, I got to get out of here. These people, it's always you. It's them. It's them. They're the problem. I need to leave. I need to bounce because I'm going to go someplace else. I'm going to go down south and live with my cousin, the cocaine dealer. You know, that was a smart move, you know. I'm going to go start over, you know, pull a geographic. And what we always say, you know, the problem with that is we bring us with us, right? The problem with pulling the geographic is I'm coming too. And you know, so I do that. You know, I go down there and I get a new job, get into this heavy metal band, just start, you know, playing all over the place. It was really fun. It was good, you know, but I was doing lots of, you know, I was doing lots of drugs. I was drinking a lot. I got remarried and I had two beautiful sons, you know, who are the most important thing to me in the world. And I love my boys more than anything, you know, and you know, that relationship, you know, that wound up lasted for 20 years, but I got a divorce at 5 years of sobriety, you know. But, you know, I'll just touch on that. I'm all over the place already anyway. I got the Rona and a fever. Who cares? I know everybody here. So, you know, and because of what I, you know, that relationship lasted 22 years. I was divorced for 5 years into sobriety. And, you know, my kids are like around 12, 9-ish, you know. No, I'm sorry. My kids were like 18, 16 age when I got divorced. And I had 5 years of sobriety. And because of that time that I had and what I had learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to walk through that divorce with some level of integrity and decency and, you know, and treat her like a friend now and be there for her when she moved out, bought her house and I bought my house, you know, and it was like totally different, you know, because of the things that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, because of men like Jason who like walked me through that and James, you know, and you know, and I'm forever grateful for stuff like that, you know, because, you know, not only because I want to be a better man today and it is the right thing to do, you know, my kids are watching, right? My kids are watching. I don't ever say a bad thing about my ex-wife in front of my children. You know what I mean? And that was a painful divorce. And about 5 years of sobriety, I went a little nutso, man. I was in no man's land. I went off the deep end a little bit, man, and did some things I'm not really proud of, you know. And it was tough. It was a tough period in my sobriety. I mean, I got a divorce. I dated a newcomer. I bought a Harley Davidson. I joined an MC. I just went crazy, man. I just went crazy. By the grace of God, I made it through it, and I'm sober today, you know. But it was a rough time, and God had a different plan for me. You know, it wasn't the plan I wanted. I thought it was the end of the world, and he brought me my girlfriend that I have today, Brooksy, who's a beautiful woman that just loves me. She loved me when I wasn't ready to be loved yet, and she knew that because I communicated it to her because I was living by principles that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous with honesty and integrity and communication, you know, and I was able to tell her, you know, I'm hurting. It's going to take me a while, but she's there and she loved me and has been patient, been with me. And I'm just so eternally grateful, you know, my God doing for me once again, what I cannot do for myself, you know, and it never ceases to amaze me how that works, you know. So let me get into like what happened, you know, what it was like. Yeah, I drank too much. I can't control my drinking when I start, right? We all should be able to relate with that, you know. What happened was I wound up, you know, becoming this man that was like leading a double life, I was literally leading a double life. I had the kids, the wife, I owned a home, I had a great job, a company I worked for 22 years. I had a nice home in Orcutt, you know. I was coaching my kids baseball. I'm going to church. I'm playing on the worship team. I'm doing all this stuff on the outside to try to make myself look good, you know, but on the inside, I'm dying. I'm literally dying on the inside, you know. And what I'm doing is I'm waking up in the morning and I got whiskey bottles hit all over the garage, right? You know, I'm getting up at 6 a.m. I'm taking shots of whiskey, you know, looking both ways to make sure my wife can't see me or no one's up, you know. I'm loading up an ice chest full of beer and with those little airplane shots of whiskey, Vicodin. And I'm taking my company work truck, you know, and I'm going and I'm hanging out at the nude beach all day long. This is what I was doing. This is how sick and twisted it got, you know. And I'm living in this world that's just creating so much shame and guilt for myself. And it was just horrifying. And I wound up getting busted by the Rangers who sent pictures to my company. And I lost my job at 22 years. I hit a low, you know, so I had to come home and tell my wife that I lost my job. I'm the, you know, she's in nursing school, you know, and she's just getting ready to get out and she's making decent money, you know, but you know how we laugh, you know, I was a high bottom drunk, you know, high bottom drunk is a drunk that has a, you know, a wife with a good job. But, you know, I had to come home and tell my wife that I, you know, I lost my job because instead of going to work, I'm on a beach drinking, laying out naked during working hours when I'm supposed to be at work. You know, I mean, there's no other way around it but to come clean, you know. And I hit this low. I mean, I just came to a spot where, you know, my drinking just really, it was really bad. And, you know, I continued to drink for another 2 years after that. You know, I lost my job. It was a horrifying feeling. I had this black cloud that followed over my head everywhere I went. I didn't think I was going to get out from underneath it. I was totally embarrassed. The industry that I'm in, word gets around, everybody knew. It was horrifying, you know. And I got another job, worked for a couple of years, and just drank heavily, just pounding whiskey. And, you know, bottom line, I just drank myself to a point where I wound up on the garage floor with a bottle of whiskey in one hand and a gun in the other. And I wanted to blow my brains out. I figured everybody would be better off without me, you know. It would just be better if I was gone, you know. That's the way I really felt on the inside. I didn't feel like my life was worth much anymore. You know, and you know, when we're like that, you know, what we don't see is a selfishness, you know, because who am I thinking about? All I'm thinking about is me. I'm not thinking about my kids. I have two beautiful kids, you know, I'm not thinking about them. It's just, you know, part of this disease is selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and afraid, you know. It's just some of the symptoms of the disease, you know, and that's all I could think about. Poor me, poor me. Life's over. I'm done. Time to off myself. Time to take the easier, softer way, really. But good thing I didn't have the guts to do that, you know. But that's when my cousin James stepped in and you know, talked me down. I remember being on the you know, on the garage floor calling you, James, you know, James called. And my wife gave me the phone. He's like, let me talk to him. And I remember what he told me. He said, you don't have to live like this anymore. You know, how much is left in that? Yeah, I remember you asked me, how much is left in that bottle? You know, I probably went, oh, about this much. Now you can't see my fingers. You know, well, about this much. You know, just there's a little bit left, you know. And he says, pound it. Pound it right now. Pound it. That's the last drink you ever have to take, brother. You know, it's time, bro. It's time. Enough is enough, you know. And thank God. thank God I had enough willingness in me to listen to him and then, and to take the direction, you know, we need to get you into treatment. And he called and he said, let me call some places and see what happens. You know, just be willing, be open-minded. Okay. And I was the next day he called places all over and he found a place that was willing to admit me if I was able to show up, catch a flight and show up on the following Monday morning, you know, and again, it was just God that stepped in. It was a new treatment program, and their home base was back east in Kansas or some place far away. You know, I was going to have a long flight, but she said, we just opened up a new facility. Do you have any idea where Santa Barbara is? And he's like, what? Are you kidding me? That's where we live. That's our backyard. And they're like, really? So they were able to admit me that Monday morning. You know, again, to me, that's a real God shot, you know, out of nowhere that popped up. And they took me in for like a quarter of the price of what it normally costs. And they just rolled with that. You know, I don't have a $20,000 big bug. I got one for like $7,500. So I went to a treatment up in the mountains of Santa Barbara, you know, and it was beautiful overlooking the ocean, you know, and by the end of that treatment, I didn't want to leave, man. I was scared to leave. I was terrified to leave, you know. I remember it was a place that treated people for all kinds of different things. There was, you know, they had sex addicts in there. They had addicts. They had alcoholics. They had just people with all, you know, eating disorders. It was the whole thing. I remember like the director of the place looked at me and said, you know, you can never, ever drink again. I'm like, really? Like never? I was shocked, you know, like, you know, I can't even like have like a glass of wine or something, you know? And this is like, no, you can never drink again. You know, I later found out it's probably the worst thing you could tell an alcoholic, you know? And, you know, I came to you guys, of course, you taught me one day at a time, right? I have a daily reprieve based upon my spiritual condition, one day at a time, man, you know? But she wasn't an alcoholic, you know, that's why she probably said that. She didn't know. She can't relate like we can, you know? That's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you could roll into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there could be a cowboy sitting next to a gangbanger, sitting next to a soccer mom, next to a biker. I mean, it don't matter, you know? Two alcoholics, you know, one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, just sharing experience, strength, and hope is the whole difference in the world, you know. We can relate to each other. We know the feelings. We know the despair. We know the disease, and we can relate with each other, you know, and that's the beauty of this program, you know. So anyway, I get out of that treatment, and I come back home, and I remember we were making these plans in treatment, like how many meetings we were going to hit and stuff. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, they want us to commit to how many meetings are you going to hit? You know, and I was willing to commit to like two a week, you know. I said, I'll hit like two a week, you know. And I came here and, you know, of course, Lee told me 90 and 90, you know. I got a sponsor, you know, and, you know, it was the 90 and 90 thing, man. You make 90 meetings in 90 days. Lee's thinking, did I tell him that? Yeah. And that's what I tell my guys, too. You know, that's what we do, man, when we're new. And I was just willing to do, you know, by the grace of God, I had the willingness to do what I needed to do, that little bit of willingness. And I started to take direction. Here's where the meat and potatoes of it is, you know. I had to do things that I did not want to do. I had to be willing to do things I did not want to do. I didn't want to go to a meeting, you know, every day. Like, every day? Are you kidding me, man? You know, and go to this room and see all these people. They're all happy. They all know. They're all smiling. They're all shaking hands, hugging each other. Where are these people on, man? What's going on here? And it was just so bizarre, you know. But really, deep down, I wanted that. I wanted that bad. I wanted that feeling of belonging, you know. And I saw hope, you know. You guys showed me that there's hope, you know, that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and, you know, it's not a train coming to run me over, you know. And I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous through doing the work that there is hope, you know. There's hope, and there's a, you know, I feel a peace and serenity in my life that I never knew existed. I didn't know that it existed because I never felt it before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. So I got a sponsor, right? Started working the steps, going through the steps. He told me I needed to get service commitments. I got service commitments. I started being of service, taking secretary commitments, pouring whatever it was, setting up the meeting, whatever it was. I had to take service commitments. And I know today those service commitments are what saved my butt, man. You know, when I didn't want to show up to the meeting, I had to show up to the meeting. I got the key to open the church, you know. I got to set the chairs up, man. And, you know, I got to do this. I got to do that. You know, I get to do this. I get to do that because now I reap some of the rewards of the program. And I understand how important those lessons were and those things that I did in the beginning, you know. God, the big book, you know, work the steps, buy the big book. I know, like, me and Jason, we work the steps, we go straight out of the big book, man, old school, column it out, four column, four step, you know, working the 10 step, doing these things, you know, and getting this loving God in my life, you know, having this loving God working in my life that, wow, you know, I went to church before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't come here with a disbelief or a non-belief in God. I believed in God, right? I just didn't think God believed in me anymore. I thought my last chance was already up. You know what I mean? I didn't have this loving God in my life. I just had a God I felt that just gave up on me. And I learned to have a new relationship with my higher power now, you know? And now, you know, like I was talking with my sponsor today, you know, have this loving God that works in my life. And if I get out of the way, if I get Kevin out of the way and allow him to mold me and become what my higher power would want me to be, not what I want me to be, things always seem to turn out much better for me. And life becomes, you know, starts to take new meaning, you know? So, you know, being of service in Alcoholics Anonymous has been great for me, the opportunity that I've had. You know, I always say, you know, man, I could be all the times that I've had service commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've had fun, you know, washing coffee cups, you know, talking smack with my bros. You know, I could be in here washing coffee cups, laughing it up, mucking it up with you guys, you know, or I could be sitting out in my truck alone crying, you know. You know, there's so many benefits of service, and becoming a part of, you know, all these different benefits I get out of that. And big book, God, steps, sponsorship, being a sponsor is been a great thing for me. I learned so much from my sponsees. I have a sponsee right now that's, he's on a bike now for like a year and a half. This guy rides a bike to meetings every day in the rain. Not every day, but every time he goes to a meeting, he rides his bike, you know. Whether it's raining, whether it's not, sometimes he carries his bike because the dude's had like 15 flat tires. When he first got sober, he was riding around a women's beach cruiser. I'd see him going down the road carrying it with another flat. I'd pull over and pick him up, you know. Rides his bus to go visit his kids and spend time with them on the weekend. The dude is like doing the program, man. He's teaching me things. And I love that about Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not sponsorship. It's not some ego thing for me where I'm talking down to some guy. No, it's me, you know, two alcoholics helping each other, you know. And I learned so much, you know, from it. And I've had stints in my sobriety where I've not had a sponsee, you know. I've gone 30 days, maybe a couple months without a sponsee, and it's just not good for me, man. I need that connection. I need to be working steps with somebody. That's why I love grabbing up new guys and taking them from the beginning. I love that, and watching the lights come on and watching them see them get this program and watching their lives change. It's a beautiful thing, man. It's a beautiful thing. This program has given me purpose. It's given me like a purpose in my life that gives me self-esteem that I didn't have before, that I had lost, you know, when I'm left to my own devices. That's what happens. And this program is giving it back to me. What's that saying we say, you know, if you want self-esteem, do esteemable acts, right? I learned all that stuff, all those big words we learn in here, you know, accountability, honesty, integrity, you know, all these words that I learned to live by that you just say out of your mouth before, but you really didn't know what they meant. You know how to apply them to your life, you know. Or I didn't know how to apply. I should be talking about myself. I didn't know how to apply them to my life. This program has given me all this stuff. I'm eternally grateful. I mean, it's been this has probably been the toughest talk I've ever had. I'm totally out of it, and but you know what? That's okay. It's not about me. And like my sponsor tells me, just get out of the way, man, and let God do the work. If there's one person that hears one little thing that you may have helped or God may have helped through you, then you're cool, man. You're good. Like we always tell our bros, and they're walking up to the podium, you know, just tell the truth. Just tell the truth, man. Tell the truth. Share your experience. And I'm just so filled with gratitude today, and it's been, like I said earlier, it's been just an emotional day with all the texts and calls from all you guys, man. I love you. I love the men in this program and some of the women too, you know, and Alcoholics Anonymous has really, truly given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. And I'm sorry, guys, I'm going to have to cut it a little short tonight because I am losing it. And I am just rambling. And so thank you. Thank you, Trish, for asking me to speak. I appreciate it. And thank you, Lee, for, you know, for what you do, man. And I received all those texts from everybody today, man. That's an awesome thing you do, bro. Love you, man. And I love all you guys. Thank you.
Wow, Kevin. Everybody can unmute and clap for Kevin. Seriously, going to any length to show up for us tonight.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Great job.
Oh, amazing. Thank you,
Kevin.
Good job, dude.
I'm just kind of speechless that you showed up with a fever.
Yeah, it's okay. I can see my cheeks are all red.
Oh, so good. It's going to be a good story for you later.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Kevin.